I like Jimmy Buffett. I love Mark Twain. I just love Mark Twain. In fact, Jen and I have made Mark Twain pilgrimages twice in our life. The first time was shy of 25 years ago when we lived in Wisconsin, and I served our suburban Milwaukee congregation, First Unitarian North. During the summer hiatus in our regular services, we took US 90 to La Crosse and then turned left onto the Great River Road, which traces along the length of the Mississippi. I know a few of us have taken that drive. We followed it as long as we had time, which turned out to be for us a Cairo, which I learned is actually pronounced Cairo, which is about the southernmost possible part of Illinois. We definitely had arrived in the south. However, our main reason for the trip was to stop about two-thirds of the way down the river at Hannibal, Sam Clemens' boyhood home. Now, I have friends who have had different experiences, but this was mine. It was resoundingly disappointing. All these years later, what I recall most there was the statue of Huck and Tom that stands at the foot of Cardiff Hill. Perhaps some of us have seen it. Most of us have seen the photograph. It shows the two boys walking along. We were told it represents Huck trying to slow Tom's progress forward toward adulthood. I found that a past strange perspective, considering, well, everything about Samuel Clemens and what he thought and what he wrote about. In fact, I have to admit, the whole experience struck me as slightly off. As Clemens didn't really... Was there a pause? Yeah, some of us. I know some of us have loved that experience there. For me, it just, you know, it was just slightly off focus. And it occurred to me that that would, in fact, be reasonable. After all, in his lifetime, Sam Clemens didn't say a nice word about Hannibal, and so maybe it's only reasonable that down the years, the good citizens of that town came mostly to be about smiling at the tourists and taking their money. The more, for me, interesting pilgrimage was the Mark Twain House and Museum in Hartford, which Jan, Auntie, and I finally got to see about 5-6 years ago. Clemens lived there between 1874 and 1891 and wrote many of his most famous books there, including both The Adventures of Tom Sawyer and The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn. Unlike with our visit to Hannibal, with its air of naked tourist attraction, not particularly mitigated by anything else, this was a horse or house of another color. Walking through the house and standing in his study, looking down at the same grounds, more or less, that he would have viewed over and over again, and then looking at his writing desk, where his imagination roiled into some of the great tales to be spun from out of our American culture, I felt some electric charge, which seemed to me a connection between the man who was the great writer, his insights into the human condition, all of them, and, well, anyone who was willing to be open to the experience. And I was. There is so much one could address about him. What I want to reflect on here is Samuel Clemens' spirituality. To start here is a little bouquet of Mark Twain observations about religion and its practitioners. Starting with perhaps his most widely quoted, "Faith is believing what you know ain't so." Or how about his observation about the Bible? He tells us it has noble poetry in it, some good morals, a wealth of obscenity, and upwards 1,000 lies. Finally, as to practitioners of my trade, he rather dryly noted, "I've never heard a sermon in which I could not find some good, though there have been many near misses. In some ways, this followed his general view of humanity. Here are two examples again. First, the most widely quoted. Man is the only animal that blushes, or needs to. And my personal favorite, a clear conscience is the sure sign of a bad memory. It is this how we shall we call it, perhaps, jaundiced view about our human condition that I think most important to notice at the beginning of this reflection. On the face of it, we have someone who has rejected religion. But there's quite a lot more to it than that face of it. In fact, I think he represents the best of that category we now hear so much about, the spiritual but not religious. Or, as I'm coming to prefer to call it, spirituality after religions. One could say that while Clemens left his childhood Calvinism pretty early in his adult life, Calvinism never really left him. As a good Calvinist, he judged the world and maybe most of all, judged himself and found the whole thing wanting. But we might also reasonably ask, he judged the world and himself against what? Buried within that, I believe we can find the spiritual that continued to haunt him even as he walked away from organized religions. Now, I found it fascinating, at least in the sense of the old joke, that if you want to lose your faith, make friends with a priest, that throughout his life, Sam Clemens had quite a surprising number of clergy friends. Apparently, they were mostly liberal congregationalists. For instance, there was Joseph Twitchell, one of his closest friends, and in a friendship that lasted more than 40 years. Another very interesting minister friend was Moncure Conway. Originally a Methodist, he became a Unitarian minister, as well as a leading abolitionist in his day, before leaving for England, where he moved ever more independent until becoming minister for a non-aligned, non-traditionally theist, ethical humanist congregation. And don't forget, this is the mid-late 19th century we're talking about, not early 21st century Long Beach. It was, in fact, during those later years that Twain met this remarkable clergyman. They became friends and then lifelong correspondents. In fact, Clemens trusted him so much that Conway would become Clemens' literary agent for Great Britain. A few years ago, the independent scholar Duane Yuzzi delivered a wonderful sermon on Twain and Hinduism at the UU Fellowship of Easton, Maryland, where he tells us how through Conway, Twain was introduced to Eastern and particularly Hindu thought. In fact, two of Conway's books, both with substantial sections on Hinduism, were in Twain's personal library. When we were there, I managed to catch where one of them was. Between this and Twain's own experience of meeting yogis and other Eastern spiritual guides on his travels around the world, which we heard just a hint of thanks to the choir and Mr. Buffett, it inspired Yuzzi to suggest, in fact, a deeper spirituality influencing Twain than had previously been noticed. For me, his thesis was utterly fascinating. Having broken the strictures of a creedal faith, but in some genuine ways remaining a seeker after truth, Sam Clemens was actually able to see hints of something profound in whatever tradition he encountered. And as a world traveler, he had a lot of opportunity. So perhaps Mr. Yuzzi is right, suggesting that Twain's spirituality was influenced by Hinduism in his later years. He certainly makes a good argument. But more importantly for me, in his sermon, Yuzzi also points to Clemens having had a deep personal insight that may well have been informed by reading and conversations, but more importantly, which erupted out of Clemens' heart as something more than an idea, however good, but rather as an actual physical experience. Think of conversion, metanoia, kinsho. Think of enlightenment. And this is the real point. Mark Twain was no doubt informed, if also repulsed, by his childhood religion. Then cut loose from the formal affiliations, he was able to wander widely in the fields of the Lord, having deep friendships with several spiritual types, many liberal Christians, and at least one Unitarian, but also letting him encounter as equals people of other traditions, ranging from Judaism to Islam to Buddhism to Hinduism, as well as to see into the hearts of people who claim no faith. And what I find that did was prime the pump. In this case, that pump is the heart. He certainly saw the foibles and the hypocrisies in organized religion and its practitioners, and even in those without any particular religion, we might add. He also caught hints of things of value along with those failures. Those things, if you will, against which he measured the failures. Along the way of his life, filled as it was with joy, and as anybody who knows his life also knows, terrible sorrows, successes, and terrible failures. Like all of ours, I might add, he found himself ready when life gifted him with something wondrous. In 1897, in that following the equator that Jimmy Buffett alludes to, and we heard in the choir, Clemens writes, in Sydney, I had a large dream. Many of us have heard of lucid dreams. You know, they're something that we have. Often most human beings have one or two or three, maybe in a lifetime. They're dreams, but they're not dreams. There's a vividness to them. There is an experience. They often mark how we see the world in new ways. These are powerful moments for all of us. And in Sydney, I had a large dream. And in the course of talking, I told it to a missionary from India who was on his way to visit some relatives in New Zealand. I dreamed that the visible universe is the physical person of God, that the vast worlds that we see twinkling millions of miles apart in the fields of space are blood corpuscles in his veins, and that we and the other creatures are the microbes that charge with multitudinous life those corpuscles. In short, Twain is saying he dreamt, he felt somewhere deep within him that the universe is God, and we are the life force of God. Not just a dream, a large dream. Now, the missionary then goes on to a discussion of comparative miracles, and frankly, I know this might be a surprise to many of you, I lost interest. Wherever the missionary hoped to go, I don't know, or Twain hoped to show us he went, I didn't follow it. The important point is that dream, the large dream. I've had a version of it myself. I bet you, each of you, have as well, or at the very least have had an intimation of it here and there. I'm sure because it is the song the universe is constantly singing to us into our individual hearts. If we take this large dream together with Twain's various allusions to a real God behind it all, we might find something. Think of the original spiritual, but not religious. Think of Spinoza and Blake and all those who saw the divine in the ordinary suchness of life, to see a world in a grain of sand and heaven in a wild flower, hold infinity in the palm of your hand and eternity in an hour. And that's not the eternity that at least one friend said happens on the hours that I speak. All of a sudden, instead of a neo-Calvinist certain of his sin but not sure about what he's sinning against, we have somebody who sees us all as connected within the body of God. The primary experience of which all mystics has testified is, in fact, love. And with that, of course, comes a deep sense of responsibility, each of us to the other. That's the large dream. I think of Mark Twain's dream. It seems to me some feeling of love for all the parts was true in him and seeped into everything he wrote. Ironically, maybe particularly within those harder words he sometimes wrote, particularly later. Seeing clear is not being nice. Clemens saw the shortcomings and the sins, his own as well as others, sin being those actions that deny the preciousness of the individual or our total reliance upon each other. Here is what I think is the best of spirituality after religions. What Sam Clemens, what Mark Twain calls us to is a relentless facing into the world, to a deep authenticity. Did he come to have a neo-Hindu sensibility? Perhaps. I like to think so. But that doesn't really matter. What he did come to that we can be sure of is that we are, all of us, connected. And with that, for him, most important, that our actions count. This is the secret truth that makes religions true and which informs any authentic spirituality. What I believe is that from that insight, from that large dream of that real God and ourselves as part of it, Sam Clemens called us all to an authentic life. There is no deeper calling for us as human beings. It is the way of authenticity in the face of so much that is false and self-serving. It is the song of hope in the face of hopelessness. It is about the healing of our own hearts and the healing of this world. And Mark Twain, of all people, like a prophet of love, calls us into that mystery and joy. Something kind of wonderful, ain't it? Spirituality after religions. Amen.